Hello and welcome to Circling the Cup, San Jose Sharks podcast, episode number 157. And if you think I sound enthusiastic now, wow, are you going to be surprised for the rest of this podcast? I'm Alex. Here with me, as always, the Honorable Ben. What's up, Ben?
Go Kraken.
Oh, no! Not okay. But at least you didn't turn Vegas. Seattle sports fans are amazing. That is a great sports town. So until they're obnoxious, I'll let you get away with it. And of course, live via carrier pigeon, via satellite, via drone relay from Sweden. Colin, what's up, Colin?
I kind of like how Marlowe's been playing.
Hey, let him get a record so something good happens here. First topic today is probably the biggest topic of the Sharks week, really, which is Martin Jones. Now, I know what you're thinking. Wait, haven't we already talked about Martin Jones? Hasn't everyone already talked about Martin Jones? Yes, but something slightly different happened this year. In fact, instead of everyone else calling out how crappy Jones has been lately, and by lately, I mean in the last couple of seasons, really, our coach, after a absolute shellacking by the LA Kings, called him out. Now, let me read you what he said. In retrospect, maybe I should have, Bugner said after the Sharks' 6-2 loss to the Kings on Thursday at Staples Center. That was in reference to, should he have pulled him out after three goals in the first six shots he faced? The answer is, yeah, probably. Duh. But that quote continues. The quote is, that's not up to our standard, that goaltending, Bugner said. I mean, we've given him a chance here to grab the net, especially with Dubnyk being hurt. Surprise, surprise, Dubnyk's hurt, if you didn't know that. Again, we're not expecting him to win hockey games for us. Weird way of phrasing, but I understand what you're getting at. To stand on his head. But we've got to have solid goaltending, especially at the beginning of games. It's not up to our standard, and I'm sure it's not up to his own. That was reported by Curtis Pashelka over at the Mercury News. Now, I know what you're probably thinking. Whoa! When was the last time someone called out our goaltender on our staff, like directly like that? And I can't really remember. Now, I also know what you're probably thinking. Whoa! How bummed was Jones to find out that he'd be benched for the next Vegas game, especially when the Sharks brought up Melnichuk? Well, let me tell you something. He was fine because he wasn't benched. That was basically our coach trying to light a fire under the player. But there's so many things about the way that went down that just doesn't work for me personally, and I'm sure it doesn't work for a lot of you Sharks fans. One, Martin Jones is technically winning us games, assuming we make it to a shootout. That's not something you really want to be banking on, and it's also not something that you really want, considering we're playing most of our games in division, which means every time we get to that point, we're also giving someone else a point. If you don't have confidence in your goaltender, don't play your goaltender is kind of the way I'm looking at it. Again, especially if you really feel like, I should have pulled him earlier that last game and he's not playing up to our standard, then give him a break. If you really want to send a message, bench him. Now, I'm not a fan of rushing prospects up. I don't know if Melnichuk's ready yet. Dubnyk's obviously not capable of playing, but my feeling is, if you don't think Jones can win you games, don't start him right now. Now, to be fair, we've talked about this a lot. The whole team's playing like crap, including in front of Jones. So it's not necessarily all Jones. But again, this is a confidence thing. And it doesn't help your team if your team doesn't have confidence in that particular player either. Now, I know Ben has got about an hour-long rant on this. So I'm just going to wind him up. And then Colin will throw it to you.
No.
Yeah. Colin can go first.
Let me go before the hate starts. Our defense has been non-existent in front of Jones. Worse, the one thing our defense seems to be doing consistently this season is screening our goaltender. This week against the Kings, our most expensive player had this beautiful screen where the Kings just scored off him. And it's like, great. So we're paying this guy, like, he's the highest paid defenseman in the league, and he's fucking our goaltender. Oh, look, nobody on our team is playing defense in front of our goaltender. Nobody's clearing out pucks. Nobody's protecting the goalie space. But it's the goalie who's screwing us over, even though they're actually blocking shots this season. We've seen what happens when our goalies are selling us out. That was last season. Our goalies started the season trying, but nobody else did. But it's the goalie's fault.
Let me just throw some numbers real quick with where Jones is right now. His goals against average is 3.96, and his save percentage is 0.867. Like,
yeah, yeah. No, it's hot garbage. Yeah. But at the same time, like this is the voodoo within goalie stats, because you know Niemi's stats when he won a cup weren't that bad. But we all know Niemi is a pretty trash goaltender.
I mean, the team in front of him was good.
The team in front of him compensated for his weaknesses. Now, I'm not saying we need to have a team as good as that Hawks team in terms of helping the goaltender, but do something.
Well, that's what I was going to say before. I want to raise my hand real quick before we set you off, Ben. And that is, at this point, like this is a shortened season. At this point, you have to do something. Because whatever it is the Sharks think they're doing, it's not working. Now, whether you want to put all the blame on the goaltenders, which I don't necessarily think you can do, then change something. If you are going to put all the blame on the goaltenders, change something. If you're going to put the blame on the defense, change something. But don't call out Jones. First of all, Jones already knows he's not having a good season. Everyone, literally everywhere, is talking about it. There's no way he's blind to it, and he knows.
Seasons.
Seasons, right. And look, it's not for lack of trying or anything like that. So it's not like he's not aware that he's not doing well. But for me, it's like, don't kind of throw out this hollow threat and then not actually follow up in any way. Because all you're doing is you're targeting a player, okay? You're targeting a player who knows he's playing like crap, but then you're rewarding him by letting him try again and again and again and again.
Wait. But
Colin, please, God, let me go.
We're stuck with Jones, aren't we? Like, there was no way for us to do anything about this before this season, right? Ben, what do you have to say about that?
Okay, this is going to be the logic on why they continue to start.
So first of all, just as pure management technique, publicly trashing a player is like it's awful, awful, awful people management. It is it's not good coaching unless you live in the 1950s. So I object to, you know, Bogner throwing Jones under the bus just on principle. It is not going to improve anything, and it definitely didn't lead to Jones only giving up 2 goals. In the game where he did end up starting. So that's, first of all, this shows that, you know, Bogner's a dick and, you know, fuck that guy in the first place. Second of all, if you are going to, you know, publicly blame a player, as you say, it doesn't do anything to then not hold them accountable in any other way, right? It's just deflection. And that's ultimately what Bogner was doing. He's deflecting, right? By throwing Jones under the bus and saying Jones is the problem here. And by the way, Jones had a shit game against LA. He should have been pulled after 3 goals. And Bogner is the one who is accountable for not pulling Jones at that point. Whether, you know, it was because Melnichuk might not be ready or whatever. If Melnichuk's not ready, you live with it, you don't say shit, and you just move on, right? That's what a healthy, normal people manager does. Maybe you have a conversation with Jones in the background about, you got to be better, bud, because we have nothing behind you. Dubnyk's hurt. Melnichuk's not ready. We just don't want to throw him to the wolves. Whatever. But you cannot go in public and trash your player. Like, long term, I mean, granted, you know, there's not much they can do until the end of the season. But long term, there's nothing good that comes from that. Finally, it's deflection for the team as a whole. Because the team as a whole are the fucking morons who didn't waive him in the offseason and solve this problem. Jones has been bad for 2 years. There was absolutely no indication that Nabby had been able to do anything with him through the last half of last year. It's working by hope as a strategy, which, by the way, is not a business strategy you ever want to use, to think that we can just, you know, fix this guy with some coaching. You know, Jones is... clearly, when he's been good, it's been a product of actually having good players in front of him. And everybody knew that this was going to be a season in which you didn't have good players in front of him. And also,
so Ben,
yes,
what would waiving Jones have done for us in terms of cap and all?
$2 million a year, basically. Waiving him was between $2 to $3 million per year on your cap and just eaten up. But so be it. He's done. He's donezo. It's a sunk cost fallacy to keep riding a player you know is done.
If you're gonna use these seasons to mask a rebuild,
right?
That $2 million isn't really going to affect a lot.
Exactly right. You could find a cheap starter caliber goalie for that $2.5 million that you get back year over year. I mean, you just can. I mean, certainly better than Jones. I mean, he's bad. He's not going to be better. Anyway, the last thing I kind of wanted to say here is it's also, disingenuous and deflection of those larger decisions the org fucked up in the offseason and the larger decisions they continue to fuck up this season. This is not a season where you should be trying to win individual games. This is a season in which you are trying to find out which players are going to be able to help Timo and Hertl and LeBanc and whichever core is not, dead or retired in 3 years when you're good again. And again, that's not what this team is doing. This team is writing this as if they are a bubble playoff team that can get hot goaltending and end up in the playoffs and sell some tickets when COVID is over, because this is a dumb team making dumb decisions. And
does this team even have a core though? Like in 3 to 5 seasons,
it certainly has a core that is signed up.
Yeah.
So, you can't worry about that. You cannot worry about that, right? Like, what you have to do is say, look, the window has closed on us.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's closed for now. So how can we reopen it as fast as possible? And reopening it as fast as possible, I mean, there is a sense in which playing Jones is reopening it as fast as possible because it's the route towards the second or third draft pick. But just then be open about it.
Yep.
Can I point out one other thing, and maybe I already did point this out, or maybe it was already clear from what I was saying, but, Ben, you talked a little bit about using negative reinforcement with players. And here's the thing that bothers me about the way that our coaching staff did it in this one instance in particular. Again, everyone has been talking about this. Everyone has been writing about this for years now. This is not a mystery. So it's not like this is early on when Jones is struggling and you feel like you need to, kind of give him a little bit of a push. Hey, we expect better from you. You need to play better.
Right.
This is like, hey, did you guys know that Jones isn't playing well? Now? You just figured that out now.
And it's so ass backwards, right? It's like, you guys are the ones who made the decision first to keep him here, second, to play him. So if he's bad, you guys are the ones who are accountable, right?
Well, that's why it's so baffling that immediately my expectation was, oh, they're going to bench him. They're going to actually bench him. And, Nabby will take him aside and work with him or whatever. And they'll have Melnichuk play until Dubnyk can come back or whatever. And again, I'm not a fan of rushing players up, especially if you're not going to be able to give them consistent time. But in this situation, just because you have Dubnyk injured, if you don't have faith in Jones and you've just trashed him publicly, I don't think starting him makes any sense. But and against a good team.
But again, you also have to remember that these are dumb people who think that negative reinforcement actually does work, right? But they only reserve that for the young players. And of course, here they also kind of did reserve it for the young players because, if it was a young player making these mistakes and being bad, they would be in the press box. And so they even fucked that up, right? They even fucked up being stupid. So it's incredible.
I think at least in Boone's defense there, that it seems like him doing that feels like a last resort for him. Now, again, it doesn't really matter. It's the way it kind of happened, the effect it had, which was seemingly nothing on anything. It's just like, I understand that they're paying a lot for Jones and, the contract. But I got bad news for this hockey team. We got a lot of bad contracts right now. That are absolute anchors here. Okay. And the deal is I don't really care And I'm one of the people that actually really care about the cap situation and the money side of things. I think it's fascinating. It's one of my favorite parts, contracts and all that. I don't care what you paid for someone. Yeah. If they are sucking, stop.
Right.
Because you're costing their any potential trade value they may or may not have, right? You are affecting the development of other players. You are killing the morale of the team. You're losing games. There's literally nothing in that situation that you are accomplishing. And I think one of the real frustrating things about this season continues to be that it is really hard to tell what the hell the team is doing. Because, you know, even if they want to pretend like they're on a cup run, which I don't think anyone even they believe is a thing right now, the system is just not being executed well or consistent. I'm trying to find any sort of pro to grab onto other than Hurdle's, you know, post-game interviews because he's so charming. And Drew Remenda being back and Brody having long hair, which for some reason I seem to really like.
Weird.
But I can't. But I can't. I can't because I don't understand what the coaching staff is doing or what they're doing anymore. I think I understood in the very beginning, but now I feel like, again, it's square peg, round hole, and they're just trying to shove it in there. I don't understand what the team is doing in terms of the players that's cycling up and down. I don't really like the only thing I understand on the actual roster right now. Oh, I mean, I like Hurdle. There are a couple guys that I like who have effort, but like the only thing that I can consistently go, okay, is trotting Marlowe out there so he breaks his record.
Yeah. Like, I used to joke that the Rangers is where hockey careers go to die.
Oh, yeah. It was like, a retirement home for a long time.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Now I'm just like, the Sharks are where hockey careers go to never start.
It's so sad because I'm still, and maybe, I don't know, Ben, maybe you need to slap me upside the head and give me a reality check. I still believe, like, not that this is a cup team at all, but I still believe that the roster we have should be better than it is. And
absolutely.
I'm just like, I'm really struggling with how bad it is.
I don't know. Like, where do you get that confidence from? I mean,
I don't know. I don't know, man. Blind faith, or maybe the players as individuals, I believe in, and not together. And actually, I do think that's one of my big issues right now. You know, I'm sure you guys are too. I'm constantly getting texts from people asking about Carlson and all this stuff. And look, like I think a large part of the problem that this team faces is something that's not easy to measure. And I'm sure Ben, you don't believe in to a degree, but for me, it's, I don't think this team has any chemistry whatsoever. It's not that I think these players are necessarily all bad.
Right.
It's that I don't think they're compatible.
Right. Well, that you use the term competitive, you know, chemistry, but then you use the term compatible, and I think compatible is the key piece to what's wrong here, right? Right. You know, I made a meme midweek about the whole situation with Martin Jones, and that he's being thrown under the bus for what's really terrible decisions in the long term by Doug Wilson. A series of bad contracts given to players at too old an age, when rather than, you know, cutting bait and trying to find younger players to fill those roles in the old, like, Bill Walsh style, cut bait early even. I mean, and I think Marlowe is a perfect example of how he's continuing to fuck this up, because I know you guys think it's so cool that he's going to break a dumb record on the Sharks,
but it's
counterproductive to what this team needs to be doing right now. It's one of a series of decisions this team has made that actively undermines any ability to actually get to where you think they should be with this roster. Yep.
Ben, I think you confused our enthusiasm for finding something to root for given the situation.
but that's the thing that undermines the thing that this team should be doing. And, you know, so it's been bad decisions on contracts, but it's also been hiring the wrong coaches who make themselves really stupid decisions, like criticizing their goalie publicly or deciding because they're going to face the Vegas Golden Knights that they have to promote a lovely human being but terrible hockey player to be the pugilist to stop, I guess, Evander Kane from getting penalties. And, of course, because Evander Kane is Evander Kane and no one holds him accountable, he gets penalties anyway. So, you know, wrong coaches, wrong system leads to no chemistry. leads to no compatibility. And this is not going to change. It's
not. And this is this to me, I've been a fairly big defender of Doug Wilson because for a long time, because I honestly felt like, especially in the early days, he assembled some amazing rosters.
Yes.
He managed to keep a window open that honestly should have closed a long time ago.
Yes.
Maybe we can argue we should have just closed and moved on.
No.
I don't know. I can't answer that.
I can't. Go ahead.
But here's the thing. This is really where I'm kind of fed up and have drawn the line because, you know, I said from day one, when we first brought Bugner in back, you know, I think we were all a bit excited in terms of like, hey, we know he's probably going to take over for DeBoer. Then what we saw was, obviously a bit handcuffed in some respects with the injuries and when things happened and all that. But what I'm really having a problem with right now is Doug Wilson's current philosophy, which is, hey, I've got this aging core that I've had for forever. We need familiarity with these players. And what I honestly think he should have done was brought someone else, regardless of what I think of our current coach. Regardless.
I think it's someone
with an outside perspective. Hold on.
Yeah.
From an outside perspective to go, hey, I don't care what you did. I don't care who you were. And not lip service like we kind of, you know, got. But actually go, hey, we're gonna see what you guys are made out of. We're going to put together the best system for you and play the players who are playing into it. And if you're not, sorry, you're gone. And just take a completely objective look at everything. Whereas I think one of the things that is really screwing us up is this need to consistently overlap with prior ideas.
Well, here's the thing,
and
right?
It's just not working.
There's evidence from the McClellan transition to DeBoer that what you're talking about was the right move. Was going from, you know, one philosophy to bringing in a new voice, you know, with a slightly more focused defensive system. And for that season,
and not from within the season.
Right.
But
I think you overstate, you know, you say we were quote unquote, maybe excited about Bogner coming back. The only way in which I was excited about that is because I hoped it meant that DeBoer would get fired faster and Bogner would get his shot faster and ultimately we would know what Bogner was before he was committed to for the long term. Now, unfortunately, you know, everything went fucking haywire in that plan. And now we're stuck with a guy who has decided he's just Da Bogner. He's going to make the same decisions. Yeah. He's going to do the same stupid shit. With slightly different tweaks to the power play and the PK, and we're fucked because he's still a meathead dipshit, and that's not what this team needs right now.
Yeah, like I just so to clarify my earlier compliment towards Marlowe, because I do think Marlowe's playing well.
Yeah,
but I'd rather he be playing well somewhere else.
Yes.
Like,
on a roster of people who are not being particularly consistent, he's fairly consistent.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? No, like, you know exactly what his game is at this point. Yeah. He's not hard to predict.
No, but he's pushing, he's grinding. Like, he is being the same consistent player he's always been. He's doing it. And it's nice to see because it's like, hey, look, there's a guy who's actually working every shift. Good for him.
I mean, let's be clear, though. He has 2 points. In 13 games.
Yeah.
You know, he and Sorensen in that fourth line, you know, they're not lighting the world on fire. They shouldn't be the fourth line.
But let's face it, Marlowe is closer to powering a gasoline car than he is to being drafted to the NHL at this point. Like, the dude's a fossil.
Right.
Like, he's playing great for who and where he is in his career. Like, yeah, he's not like old. Aging like again or aging Jagr, but like he's still getting it done. And yeah, I'd rather he be getting it done on Toronto wouldn't use him somewhere.
So
but whatever. Like I just the fact that is as you guys say, like DeBoer takes or DeBogner takes over and I like if I had just gone to a cave and come back and you said, oh, nothing's changed with the coaching of the Sharks, I would believe you. I'd be like, yeah, we're playing the exact same. What do you mean we've changed coaches? There's nothing different. So
there's little things, but the thing is that like the team isn't the team isn't executing them. So I think, you know, I think they took a look at the players. I think they think that they are building their system around the players that they have due to familiarity. But I don't actually think that's what's going on, because I think when you take a look at what DeBoer was trying to do at the end of his tenure, it wasn't that wasn't really working that way. And so what we have is sort of like, again, a bit of a half step here, where it's like, hey, we're making some small changes to the rush, to zone entries. You know, we're trying not to telegraph that shot to the point so much, but hey, we're still using those players in the exact same mm-hmm. way, yeah. regardless, role wise. And look, it's not great, and it's not working. And the fact that as a Sharks fan, I have to root for the team to get to a shootout to maybe win a game. Honestly,
and to have to watch an extra 5 minutes of them. Oh God.
And here's the other thing too. And I'm sorry, I'm going to attack you Sharks fans for a second. I'm one of you, but like, I've seen a lot of people in the last week in particular, which is a little bit weird to me for one of these players, but really just keep shifting their aim. Right. So, you know, at first everyone was like Carlson and Jones. Ah, and that made sense. I mean, fine. Great. You know, Carlson not playing to where we need him to play.
Yeah.
Jones is not playing to where we need him to play. But then, you know, I saw people go, oh, well, Meyer's horribly inconsistent and Hurdle's not scoring for 3 days. And it's sort of like, hey, when your entire team can't execute the system that you're playing consistently, you're going to have streaky players. That's what's going to happen. We don't have Gretzky on our team. We don't have Lemieux on our team over here, who's just going to magically be able to, you know, or McDavid or whoever. He's going to be able to magically consistently carry the corpse of the team all the way with him. We've got a bunch of players who are, you know, some of whom are reasonably good, who any given moment don't know where the hell they are on the ice, because someone else is where they're not supposed to be on the ice. Yeah. I mean, we saw that. I can't remember which game it was, but there was a game where I think Chamek was on the ice, and like, he and Carlson were chasing a player around the back of the net. Two guys.
Yeah.
Yep.
So what do you think is going to happen to, you know, a forward on that line? You think he's going to magically be consistent for you? No, because now he's got to cover defense or attempt or get confused. It's just, it's one of those things where everything feels a little bit broken.
Yeah. Let's approach it this way for a second. Yes. This is a hypothetical. Sure. So there's probably five players on this team that I would just say those guys are doing their jobs and doing pretty well within that context. Five on this roster. Logan Couture, I don't like him as captain, but there's one guy who's been showing up consistently and scoring, and it's a bit two maybe. Okay, Tomas Hertl. I actually think he's I mean, remember guys, he's coming, not to you two, but I'm saying Sharks fans, remember this guy is coming off yet another knee injury that he rehabbed through the summer and the fall. And so, you know, he has 10 points in 13 games. That's way better than Jumbo coming off a knee injury at the end of his career both times. So let's cut the kid some slack. Donato, you know, works awesome. Hard, plays hard. He's not, you know, great defensively, but he tries defensively. And that's like 50% of, you know, what I evaluate on, really. Timo, not on the list, because I think he could give more. I think he has had bad games, but that doesn't mean I think he's the problem here, right? So let's see. That's three of my guys. So Couture, Hurdle, Donato, Ferraro. Ferraro is incredible.
Yeah,
I think I he's like been it. Incredible. You know, and he's giving his all. He's still making some rookie mistakes, but he's playing so well that it overcomes them. So that's
and
four.
He's 22.
Yeah. You know, Gambrell, if he starts scoring, he'd be on my list. He's close. I would give Knyazhov. What's that? Nah, I mean, Nieto's been good enough. Yeah.
What about Gambrell?
I just said Gambrell if he scored.
My bad.
Anyway, my fifth is Knyazhov. Because now he's having to haul the corpse of Vlasic up and down the ice, and he's still doing fine. You know, those are the guys that I think have given them all and met my expectations for them. Maybe that's the way to put it.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Would you add anybody? So Kane is scoring.
No.
Kane is scoring, but he is a nightmare of inconsistency with his attitude, and you know, he costs the team with stupid penalties all the time.
Yep.
Brent Burns, I've praised because he has played very well, but you know, also gives you those mind-numbing mistakes still occasionally. So he's close. I would actually put Burns as relatively close to my list.
I was going to say the same thing. And actually, with both Burns and Kane, again, when I said before Marlowe is consistency, I kind of feel like if you know these players by now, you kind of know that's the deal with both those guys. Like, you know, this the Vegas game, first period, Reeves and Kane start going at it. Immediately, I was like, well, yes. I would – that's why Vegas won't put a bet on that.
But not – like. But not, though, right? Because it's a known problem that needs to be addressed both by the player and the coaches.
Oh, I'm not saying it should be fixed or I'm rewarding them for it. I'm just pointing out that, like, those two guys in particular are playing exactly as I expect them based off of what I know about them.
Right. I guess I'm using expectations in a different way than that.
Yeah. I look at it like – Kane's going to give you some hustle, give you a couple of goals, and then take a stupid penalty. That's a trade you're making with that player.
So wait. Speaking to the future core of this team, if your Hurdle at 29 or however old he is when his contract's up, do you re-sign with the Sharks? Like, honestly, because
I think it's
always no. We're not going to do anything.
Can you not make me cry right now? 2 years before we have to get to that point.
You know, Colin, I hear what you're saying. I think that is a really, just from a pure logical perspective, I think it is a very hard prediction to make at this point because a lot is going to presumably happen between now and then that may indicate different things in direction. Now, if he feels like the organization is going to go through like a 5 or 6 year long rebuild, then great question. Probably not, unless he's really, really, really settled and just really likes your organization, which we've had players do, right? Like, you know, Marlowe points and Dorton points.
Can I make you all sad in a different way?
No.
We may get to 2 years down the road, and a 29-year-old power forward is not a good bet for a long contract. So maybe it wouldn't be a terrible thing if he went to the Rangers. but let's worry about that in 2 years when we know, you know, what his level of play is, I think.
Why?
Well, my point is, I don't think this team has a core. Like, there's nothing to try to build around at this point because we wasted those, you know, identify and build around a core.
Well, I think it's the 24 and 25 year olds. It's Meyer, LeBanc, Donato, Gregor, Balcers, Gambrell, and whoever else, you know, gets their opportunity. Chmielewski. Whatever, right? And again, those are the players, Leonard, these are the players that should be consistently on the ice right now because that's what this team should be focused on. So you make a great point, right? Like, Couture, you know, is going to be in his mid-30s by the time we're probably competitive again. Kane, who knows, he'll probably flee the country to avoid, you know, getting sued by 13 different casinos. And Hurdle, who knows where he'll be at that time. You're right. I mean, he's already 27.
Yeah.
Well, he'll be on his 37th knee surgery by that.
Exactly.
Yeah, but like, that's the thing that really just enrages me towards Wilson. He lit Hurdle's career on fire and just threw it in the gutter.
Well, that's not totally fair because, I mean, Hurdle was a key player in the Stanley Cup run.
Sure,
so
Dustin Brown like helped him there, but
that too. Like, but what I mean by that is like. Sorry, go ahead, Alex.
These contracts, I think the thing that we just always need to keep in mind is while some of these contracts are certainly undesirable, to say the least, they were probably the contracts that needed to occur to get those players here, and those were bets that at the time, not the length of the contract, the players, were bets that seemed reasonable. Now, a lot of them are not panning out very well, and that sucks. As a general manager, hold on. As a general,
who thought the Carlson contract was sensible?
No. I'm not talking about whether or not the specific contract was sensible. I'm talking about if you were Doug Wilson. Again, here I go defending Doug Wilson here. But if you were Doug Wilson, and you're trying to keep that window open, these players look like they are fairly safe bets to help you do so. Now, what it requires to keep them is not great, and that's where I probably would have hit the pause button. But I think my point here is it's real easy to look at the contracts and immediately shit all over everything. And there is some fairness to that, right? I don't believe in insane long, high paying contracts like that, especially not for goaltenders, as we've covered multiple times. But I also think we need to be realistic and understanding that, like, this is the position the Sharks were in at the time. This is what was in front of them at the time. These were the options. These players, you know, you take a look at Carlson. There were maybe a handful of people at most.
Yeah, I don't. I'm going to say it. I don't hate the Carlson contract. I don't.
I do.
I hate the Vlasic contract.
You weren't going to keep Carlson without that contract. And it's really easy to look at it now.
Yeah.
It's really easy to look at that now and make that call. But at that point,
I looked at it then. It was like, thanks for the rental. Get the fuck out.
I think you were an outlier and in that, not just among, like, I mean, it's a bet. Like, he's a right D, which the Sharks don't have a ton of in their system. And he's an elite right D. And he was 29 when we made this decision. He was a guy who's been injured, so it's a risk. It's a gamble. But that's the gamble you make, because there's a possible upside to it.
Yeah.
And the gamble
look at what we got in the rental. Rented him. He broke. We broke him more. And then we're like, hey, let's pay for this.
But,
you don't buy the rental car.
But here's the thing with that is we brought him in. I don't think we brought him in as a rental. Brought him in with the hopes of re-signing him.
I agree.
And then when he went down, we had a small sample size. The team obviously understood what his injury was and felt like it wasn't going to be a permanent issue and felt like he would still fit on the roster if they could retain him. Because really, if you lose a player of Carlson's potential caliber, and I know I'm saying potential, but at the time, you know, that was that's very high. What would we in the org have replaced him with?
Yeah, the decision tree there was the decision tree there was really it was Carlson or Pavelski, right? Which of these two guys are we going to assign to a longer term expensive contract? That was the context in which the Carlson decision was made, and Wilson chose to go with the younger player, with in theory the higher upside for the next 4 or 5 years. Because again, Wilson has, throughout all of this, and Alex, you said this quite a bit, operating from the idea or perspective that we do this, we have a great year, everybody stays together, whatever we do, and yay! But the problem is that at that same time, he didn't address the biggest problem with the team, which was the coaching. And so DeBoer continued to kill the players and suck, gets fired midway through the season, and everything goes to shit again. Right. So there's no way to know what the best case scenario of that looked like last year or prior. And it's also not, honestly, it's not the thing that's killing the Sharks. It's not, because I think a competent coach would be getting more out of Carlson with what he
exactly.
is and his value.
And that was kind of my point earlier when I said I believe that this team isn't playing to their potential. I look at the players on the roster, and maybe they just don't fit together, and that's a thing. But I honestly feel like our system or our coaching is not getting the best out of this group. Yeah. And look, there are not a lot of coaches in the NHL, as far as I'm concerned, who are really good at just looking at the roster and implementing a system around the roster.
Yeah.
Most of them come in with their own system, and that's kind of, you know, the way you roll. And the Sharks are in a position where, because of these contracts, they can't really do that. Necessarily, right? Because you have all these long albatross contracts. Like, it's going to be hard to move these guys. You definitely don't want to not be playing these guys if you can avoid it, because that doesn't help anything either.
Right.
So, you know, you really need someone who's going to come in and go, okay, well, shit, these are the pieces I have. Can you backfill a couple of these for me the second you can? In the meantime, we're going to take what we got. We're going to build around it. Now, I'm not necessarily saying that's not what this coaching staff has done either, because I do think, to a degree, especially in the early interviews when you talked about, you know, activating some of our offensive D a little bit more as opposed to just having them sit at the point and shoot. Like, right, that's a bit of that. I think the problem is, one, a little too much insider information has blinded a few decisions or affected a few decisions. And I think it's been proven by now that these guys can't execute well enough those things, and so there needs to be another shift. And look, it sucks. I'm gonna be honest with you, as a Sharks fan, it sucks. I like a lot of these guys. We don't have a lot of depth. We really don't. So you know, I understand the position the coaching staff's in, but the coaching staff has to be better about it. Now, we do have a couple of games that we're just going to hop through here because, you know, we have to talk about those. The Sharks started this week taking on the Los Angeles Kings, and they won a game. Woo! But they won it in a shootout. They had goals in the first period from Timo Meier and Logan Couture. I actually thought this game started well. And in the second period, wheels just once again fell off the bus. And the second period continues to kill the Sharks. The Kings would go ahead and tie it by the end of the second. Then Dustin Brown would score. And then late in the third, Evander Kane would score. That would take it to overtime. There'd be no goals there. Jones is in net, so maybe that's why there were no goals there. And then the Sharks would go ahead and win on a shootout. I don't want to go individual game observations on this quite yet, but the Sharks would then play the Kings again.
I do want to say, though, these games specifically highlighted one of my favorite things so far this season. It's watching Carlson take the puck from our defensive zone, start doing his epic end-to-end ice run, and then right at center ice, he realizes he's not as fast as he was when he was 23, and everyone knows it. And you just see him hit this wall.
It's important to remember, too, Kings are not a good hockey team this year either. So,
in fact, you lose to the Kings, you are the worst team in the league. It's just
speaking of lose to the Kings, Ben, that next game would be a disaster. Sharks lost 6-2. It was not in any way, shape, or form a good goal or game other than, hey, Tomas Hertl did something, scored 2 goals. So shut up, all you people who think that he, you know, it's not excusable for him to go a game or two without scoring. He scored 2 goals. This is the game that we were talking about before where, you know, our coach suggested afterwards that should have pulled Jones earlier. Nonichuk gets a little bit of time, basically 9 minutes, 11 seconds or so. And hey, perfect save percentage. Look at that. Look at that. After that game, there would be a lot of hemming and hawing about what to do about Jones. And like we said before, nothing would happen. And the Sharks would take on the Golden Knights. Boo. I listened to this game on the radio, by the way, and I was so thrown off for a couple of minutes because the app or whatever you want to, however we're going to refer to it now, it was Smith and Rusinowski, who are not a bad combo. And there was all this like crazy cheering. And it wasn't the fact that it was fake that threw me off. It was the fact that I was like, the Sharks wouldn't have had a sellout. Why does it sound like there's so many fans in the arena? If you're gonna use fake sounds, you know, I want the awkward to come across in the audience. Sharks would lose this game because Golden Knights, 3-1. Only goal being, hey, I think he's gonna get a star this week, Tomas Hertl. And again, Jones started this game. I don't think it was his worst game. Wasn't a great game either. The Sharks did get, in this game. I tend not to like to blame things on the ref. Sharks got jobbed a little bit here. Most concerning is that Carlson Schmeck left the game with injuries. Now, we don't really know the status as of today of those injuries. But, you know, again, I get that the defense isn't great. We also have no defensive depth. So before you get too excited, just, you know, be aware that Sharks don't exactly have a ton of guys who are necessarily ready to backfill. And to be honest, that I would even want to throw in this situation necessarily. And I know, Ben, you keep bringing up the you got to play them consistently if you're going to do that. And I agree. I feel like in some respects, some of these guys would be better served in the Barracuda till the pro club gets their shit sorted out. Any thoughts on these games?
I am watching the Vegas game right now. And
I have another rant about this.
Okay. This game, like, so for anyone who happens to be listening to this and doesn't know the usual flow of things, I always watch games after they're done. And, you know, usually there's some discussion on our Discord that I wake up to and I get to get a sense of what the game is I'm about to watch. All the conversation around this game was basically the only way this game ended for most fans is when they turned it off. I was a little surprised that how dog shit everyone was describing this game. And within the first 2 minutes of this game, I'm like, oh, yeah, this is terrible. This is the worst game I've seen the Sharks play in a while. And it's like, yeah, it's Vegas. I hate Vegas. But you know what? Vegas has an identity. Their identity is to play like douchebags who play a 200-foot game and score. But hey, it's an identity. And as far as hockey goes, that's actually a pretty classic identity. So good for them.
Yeah. So
and they played that identity. And they, and most importantly, they opened up their Sharks book and were like, all right, page one, piss off Kane. Page two, play the Sharks physically because we fold. And, you know, page three, win.
Oh, can I just say one thing before you go on your rant, Ben, that was maddening? It's on the radio. Dan Rusinowski was doing all the interviews that he normally does. And by the way, I can't tell you again, folks, how awesome Dan Rusinowski is. That guy is an encyclopedia of Sharks moments. Some of the tidbits he gave over the course of the game and memories were just uncanny, the level of detail. But, you know, he had interviews with both DeBoer, who, you know, was back really for the first time, and Boogner. And the thing that bugged me was both of them were like, we know what to expect from each other. And yet it felt like one didn't.
Yep. Like,
No. Couldn't help it. No. He knows what to expect. And just like his former boss, he decides to just throw the players into the fucking meat grinder, which is not how you beat Vegas. In fact, I turned this game off when both, right at the beginning, both coaches put out their fourth lines because I knew at that point that Vegas was going to win. Because first of all, on that fourth line was a lovely person but terrible hockey player named Curtis Gabriel, which meant that Bogner decided that he was going to have to play the game that Vegas wants you to play, which is running into the meat grinder. And not only is that bad, but it also means that you are sacrificing one of the spots on your team that should be going to a young player who should be trying to prove themselves for the future, and sacrificing skill for a pugilist. And it's just, I'm done. I'm done with it. I'm done with this stupid fucking team doing that. So I'm just not going to watch the games where the dumb coach does the dumb thing. Maybe it hurts me as part of this podcast team, but I've got better things to do with my life than watch the Sharks do dumb shit. And not get an opportunity to see, you know, the young players do what they need to be doing.
The thing that drives me nuts, like you're talking about, you know, Vegas wants you to go for the physical game because they will absolutely destroy you in that. And you're absolutely right. And to see our team come out and start trying to play a physical, like board grinding game against the Knights, it's like, are you kidding
me?
Yeah, this team has no physical grindy players. Maybe Shimmick, but you know, he's broken again. And also, we just do not have the team culture or style. Like, you look right now, like every season basically, there are penalties that are okay and there are penalties that are not. And it changes season to season usually. Sometimes we get a couple seasons where it's like, oh, cross-checking is the worst thing ever for these seasons. But right now in the NHL, slashing and anything that like breaks possession in terms of stick penalties, that's what you're not allowed to do. Cross-checking is absolutely okay. You get 2 to 3 cross-checks before the refs call you. If you retaliate off a cross-check, you get called. The players know this. Any player who's trying to play a physical game knows that the first thing you do when you get the opportunity is you cross-check to the ribs and put the guy on the boards. And what do you see Vegas doing nonstop, and how did Shimmick get hurt? Cross-check to the ribs, no call, because that's the way the league is playing. Well, yet we're going to try to play physical against Vegas and not cross-check and not use every little trick we can to do that? No, because that's not who our team is. Well, so don't try to do it.
Here's the thing. Like, you've got Kane and Meyer, who are physical players on the offense. You've got Shimek, as you say, who's a physical player on defense. Burns likes to throw a hit. I'm not anti-hit. I'm just anti-thinking that, you know, grinding or hitting is the be-all, end-all of hockey. Vegas wins, not because they play a physical game. Vegas wins because they have really good players who can also play a physical game. And also then they are smart enough to take the dumb teams and bait them. And unfortunately, the Sharks are a dumb team. So, you know, again, hitting is not the be-all, end-all, because when you get credit for a hit, you get credit for a hit because you do not have puck possession. You'll notice that Tampa Bay doesn't win by, just hitting people. Tampa Bay wins by skating around people where they can and occasionally hitting people where they can, because Tampa Bay is a smart team. And so just, you cannot, the Sharks cannot beat Vegas by throwing themselves into the meat grinder. And I've been saying this since DeBoer was coaching here against that team. And I'm just so, so done and so tired of, you know, it's the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. And I see that enough outside of my sports teams that I can't do it to myself watching the Sharks. I just can't.
Well, and again, like, I feel just because we, like, the last, what, five seasons or whatever, we have such a tight history with Vegas. So, like, we know this team. They know us. So, seeing the quirks in our team's behavior is a lot easier to read. Because I would simplify your statement to be, every time we play a team, we try to beat that team by adopting their identity.
And that's just a good way of putting it.
And it's like, yeah, you go in with no identity and you try to play the other team's identity, they're going to love you for it.
Yeah.
Because they know what they're doing.
No, Vegas, Colin, that's strategery. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Listen, Ben, I don't begrudge you for not having the ability to watch Sharks games right now. I'm there with you. I'm very much at a breaking point. I think, you know, I'll continue to watch them, obviously, just because, you know, but I will say it is getting harder and harder without seeing where this team is going to go to look at the time spent and think it's worth it. Now,
I mean, it's not the players. Like, I actually think there's an entertaining core of players on this team that would be fun to watch. Same. That would be absolutely fun to watch if they weren't, you know, undone by the absolute mind-blowing stupidity of our coaching staff, multiplied by the bad decisions that Doug Wilson has made over the last couple of years, both in choosing coaches and in, you know, not dealing with contracts when given an opportunity, or dealing with contracts poorly when given the opportunity. So,
yeah. Although the players do still need to execute. That is also
sure.
True.
I mean, Meyer and LeBanc need to play better. Absolutely.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Three stars of the week. Raise your hand via your voice if you would like to go first. I'll go first. I haven't gone first in a while. I don't have third and second stars. So I'm going to give my first star to Hurdle.
Yeah.
Out. That's me.
Yeah. I don't have a third star because nobody really stood out to me this week besides Couture and Hurdle. So, you know, Couture and Hurdle, I would put probably in my one, two. Yeah, go ahead.
Because maybe you're going to name him too, but Aga Bowser's a star. for getting an assist that originally seemed like it was a goal.
It was a pretty good assist. Sure. Let's just agree he's our third star.
Hey, look. He's just popped up, right? So we give him something.
I'd love to see Balser's, you know, grow here, just like, you know, Leonard and Gregor and Gamprell and the other young guys. I'll give them more ice time. And Donato. Yeah. Anyway.
All right. Colin. All right. Oh God. okay. I'm going to give my third star to Knizov, because it wasn't until you guys started singing his praise that I really tried to watch him in games. Mm-hmm. And I realized one of the reasons I was having a hard time seeing him is because he's just doing his job.
Yes.
He's just quietly doing his work. You know, he's not trying to, like, make these crazy rushes. Every time you see him carry the puck for any extended period of time, it's purely to find a passing lane and put the pass up. So, like, yeah, you don't see him because he's just not going around in this flash of douchebaggery. So yeah, third star for him. Thank you for being a quiet defender, doing the work.
Yeah.
Second star, I'll give it to Couture. Because all complaints aside, the guy still puts his heart out on the ice. And consistently does it. There was a goal, one of the goals in the second LA game. that the casters were trying to lay on Couture because he wasn't blocking the pass lane on the penalty kill. And it's like, guys, he nearly intercepted two passes before that. Sorry, he wasn't like picture perfect every time. There are other people out there. And then, yeah, first star goes to Hurdle because, yeah, like, one, he has been carrying his line this whole season. Two, yeah, he had a great week.
Yeah.
I'm going to come out and say it. If you don't like Hurdle, I don't like you.
Yeah. That's it. That's fair.
I don't like you.
I mean, and he's playing
fun,
on
guy who tries.
Yeah, and he's playing on reconstructed knees, you guys. I mean,
yep.
And again, when I say you guys, I know you and you two are smart hockey fans and smart Sharks fans and are not the people I'm talking to when I say that. I'm talking to the people who are not giving a guy like Hurdle the benefit of the doubt here. I mean, he's actually playing really well.
And isn't Hurdle one of the better faceoff takers in the league right now?
You know, I don't know. I mean, it looks like it. Well, he's at 51.19%. Couture is just behind
him. Oh, it dropped. Okay, that dropped down a little bit. I thought he was up at like 57.
I mean, you know, it's not terrible. I mean, it's still a winning faceoff percentage. Mm-hmm. I mean, Gambrell is just below 50%. Marlowe's a little below it. And then there's Noah Gregor down at the, oh my God, why does he ever take a faceoff? So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, guys, Sharks, if you're wondering where they are in the standings, last still. Apparently, you can't just win all your games in shootouts with a goal differential of minus 14 and be any better than that. They do have some games coming up this week. They have another makeup game, I believe, right? Which was on Monday, the 15th. They take on the Anaheim Mighty Ducks. Nope, just the Ducks. They dropped the Mighty. You know, there you go. Yeah. 90s. Get out of here, 90s. Thursday, they take on the St. Louis Blues on the road again. And then Saturday, the 20th, they take on the St. Louis Blues again. Hey, you can follow us by subscribing to this podcast wherever podcasts are sold or free. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, you know, whatever, other places. You can check out the podcast on the web at circlingthecup.com. Really, that's just where we put the podcasts. Yeah. That's at Circling the Cup on Twitter, which
also
is
me.
Ben. Also, yeah. So, technically, both are. And yeah, yes, we do have a Facebook page. We do post when we're going to go live on it. If you interact with us, we'll interact with you. We look at it, but we don't follow it all that closely. And of course, we have a Discord that you can hunt around for and find. We love everyone who listens. Hey, sorry that we got to be such downers right now, but we want to be really honest about where we think the Sharks are. I think that's one of the things that you come to listen to us for, is not feeling like we're a PR arm of the team. No offense to any of the other podcasts out there. Everyone's kind of got
quite
their
a
own
subtweet
focus,
there.
But hey, I mean, I'm just being real. When we set out to do this podcast, we set out to just give our honest, unfiltered thoughts, which is one of the reasons why you don't see us doing a lot of interviews, because we don't necessarily, not that anyone's asked us to, or that we, you know, wouldn't want to compromise, or that anyone's asked us to compromise our ideals at all, but we specifically don't, you know, we really want to be able to be honest with you and be unfiltered.
Yeah, I think the difference is we don't even pursue that sort of stuff, because that's not who we are.
No.
I mean, we're just three idiots talking about our favorite hockey team, and we'd be doing this over Instant Messenger if we weren't doing it on, you know, this sort of forum.
We were, in fact. We don't even make money off of it, so there's really no point to it, which is why when Ben goes, I'm done watching the Sharks, I go, boop, fair. Totally fair.
Yep.
Guys, that concludes the podcast. Say bye-bye.
Randy, it's pronounced Bjorn Foot, not Bjorn Fault.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bjorn Foot.